Shalom and welcome back to Wisdom and Torah Ministries. I'm Rico Cortez, and I'm teaching you from beautiful Puerto Rico right now. I'm here sharing some time with my brother-in-law, and he decided to come and listen and some of the teachings that I'm doing. It's an honor to be here and share. And today it's going to be some of the things that I'm trying to do. I'm trying to use teachings, the types and shadows, and the Torah and the prophets, and pointing a Messiah within there. You know, it's like the Bible says in Luke, that Messiah opened their understanding that they can see in the scriptures things concerning himself. So therefore, one of the methods as a Torah teacher, one of the things that we look for is types and shadows. And we know that there's a type and shadow in the life of Joseph. Everybody knows that one. Also in the life of Isaac. Also in the life of David. Also in the life of Solomon, in the kingdom of Solomon. So in the life of Joshua, in the life of Moses. See, we can see types and shadows of Messiah. Their work resemble the work of Messiah at one point or another. Let me give you an example. It's kind of interesting how when you study the life of Isaac, it really brings you a type and shadow of the Messiah more clearly than anybody else. And I'm going to begin with this one, and then I'm going to move on into the kingdom of Solomon. Not the person of Solomon, but the kingdom of Solomon, because we know that Solomon as a person made a lot of mistakes. He had many wives. He worshiped other gods, and he did the things that he was not supposed to. So we're going to focus on his kingdom. There was perfect peace on the earth, and there was perfect peace on his kingdom when he was king of Israel. And his name, Shlomo, means peaceful, peaceable, somebody who was peaceful. So therefore, he lived by his name. He brought peace into the land of Israel. And 12 tribes were gathered together. There was peace in the land with the 12 tribes of Israel. And that's the type and shadow of the Messiah. He built the temple. The glory of Yahweh returned to the temple when he was the king. And you know, he taught the people the Torah. His wisdom, all those things happened. So we're going to compare that to the work of Messiah. But before that, I want to give you an example of types and shadows in the Torah. So Isaac. Many people focus on Abraham. Oh, Abraham, the great father of our faith. But people don't focus on Isaac. See, Isaac was not a young man. Many people, especially in the Christian churches, think that Isaac was like 10, 12, 13 years old. But what they don't understand is that Isaac was between 30 and 35 years old. He was a grown man. How old was Yeshua when he died? Somewhere between 30 and 35 years old. Another thing is that we talk about Abraham going onto the mountain, but who carried the wood to the mountain? Isaac. And who carried the wood to the mountaintop? The very same mountain where Isaac was put up on the altar. That is exactly the same mountain where Yeshua died. In the Mount of Olives. The place where Yahweh was worshipped. What's interesting is that as soon as the Yeshua comes and he dies for, he carries the wood. He willfully gives himself as an offering just like Isaac did. He knew he was going to die. He knew he was going to be put up on the altar. There was no lamb for sacrifice. And Isaac still went with his father, believing that if his father would kill him, Yahweh would raise him from the dead. See, he was a grown man. He could have fought. He could have fought it and not allowed his father, who was an old man, he could have overtaken by strength his old man and defend himself. But he chose not to do that. He willingly walked with his father towards the mountaintop, believing that if he would die, the Lord would bring him back to life. Isn't that exactly what the Messiah did? What's really interesting is that as soon as that Isaac, the whole issue in chapter 22 is resolved, but before that, you know, when it says that there was a ram in the trickets, you know, the horns of the ram got caught in the trickets. You know, it's like thorns, some kind of thorny bush and things like that. They put the crown of thorns of Messiah, who was the ram. He became the other comfort, you know. This is a type of shadow, and he's the lamb. But what's interesting is the word that they chose for the word ram in that chapter. See, there are different words in Hebrew for the word ram. But this particular one, in this particular chapter, they use one that's very intriguing. It's ayil. Ayil is the root word for the word Elohim. In the Hebrew. So they're giving you another clue. Who will be the one who will be put on the altar? It will be the Son of Elohim. The Creator, the Word of the Lord. He's the one who created all things. And then right after, he's put on the altar, and the angel of Yahweh says, do not kill him, because now I know that you love me. What happens to Isaac? You no longer hear from Isaac anymore. His mother dies, but he's somewhere. You don't hear from Isaac, because only Abraham came down from the mountain. Isaac, nobody knows where he went. Yeshua, risen from the dead, he goes unto the Father, and he comes back 2,000 years later. When Isaac comes back down, Abraham is sending Eliezer to go seek out a bride for his son. Then Yeshua says, I'm going to my father's house to prepare a place, an abode to bring my bride. Didn't he say that? Of course he did. So all of a sudden now, Abraham tells Eliezer, which means, Eliezer in Hebrew means help of Yahweh, go pick up my bride. And he goes, looks for his bride, and then they go to a well. And there's water, and there's camels. And this woman comes over, Rebecca, which means to bind together. The word means to bind. Okay? And what's interesting is that after Isaac disappears from the picture in Genesis 22, and then he reappears again when he's getting ready to look for a bride, and then Rebecca accepts the marriage proposal without hearing the voice of the groom, without never seeing the groom, without not even meeting him before. Just like you and I, when we accepted Yeshua, we've never heard the voice of Yeshua. We have never seen his face. We only heard by the help of Yahweh, by the Spirit of the Lord, that He is the true Messiah. We believe by faith. Isn't that interesting? Now, when we meet with this particular groom, like Rebecca met with Isaac, what happened? She sees him. He sees her. She must have been beautiful, which he says that she was. That as soon as he sees her, I don't think he even asked for her name. He takes her right into the tent. Right into the tent. What is what's going to happen when Messiah comes? When Messiah comes, we are his bride. He died. He went to the mountaintop. He's risen from the dead. He disappeared from the picture. When he comes back, the Spirit of the Lord has been gathering the bride all over the earth for the bride to come to the Messiah, to Isaac, to the Messiah. And all of a sudden now, when he comes in the clouds, we're going to go to the Feast of Tabernacles, Sukkot, tents. And we're going to be intimate with our Creator. We're going to be intimate with our Messiah. There's the whole story of Isaac and the type and shadow of Messiah. In what? 10 minutes? You see how much truth there is in the Torah? So when Yeshua says that the Torah and the prophets speaks of Him, He was not kidding. So what I'm going to do today, I'm going to attempt to do this in an hour. With anybody that knows me, they know that's practically impossible. But I'm going to do this, and what I'm going to do, I'm going to take the kingdom of Solomon, not the person of Solomon, not the life of the person, but the kingdom of Solomon, and it's a type and shadow of the future kingdom of Messiah on the earth in the millennial reign. See, the reign of Solomon is one of the most glorious in the entire history of Israel. You know, certainly his dominion and wealth were the greatest ever, and rulers of many nations came to see his splendor and listen to his wisdom. You know, if there was ever a perfect type and shadow of Messiah, Yeshua, and his millennial reign, this is the story of Solomon. And it's already been outlined for us in the 1 Kings and 1 Chronicles and 2 Chronicles. You know, there are some numbers of similarities between Solomon's reign and his kingdom and the ones of our Messiah that we're going to take a look at. Now, to begin with, we can see that the reign of Messiah and the reign of Solomon is exactly the same. They both begin by judgment. Messiah will come and wage war against all the enemies of Israel, against all the enemies of the world, the nations. And he would bring the sword, and he would kill them and things like that. The same thing happened in the story of Solomon. In 1 Kings chapter 2, verse 32 says, and Yahweh shall return his blood upon his own head, who fell upon two men more righteous than better than he, and slew them with a sword, my father David not knowing thereof, to wit Abner the son of Ner, captain of the host of Israel, and Amasa the son of Jether, captain of the host of Judah. Verse 33 says, their blood shall therefore return upon the head of Joab. See, he's taking over as the king. Joab was the general for David. And Joab decided to give his alliance to somebody else, to David's other son. And now there's repercussions for that. And upon the head of his seed forever, and David, and upon David, and upon his seed, and upon his house, and upon his throne, shall there be peace forevermore from the Lord. And Benaiah, the son of Jehoiada, went up and fell upon him and slew him, and was buried in his own house in the wilderness. And 1 Kings 2:44 says, the king said moreover to Shimei, thou knowest all the wickedness which thou heart is privy to, that thou didst to David my father. Therefore Yahweh shall return thy wickedness upon thy own head. And King Solomon shall be blessed, and the throne of David shall be established before Yahweh forever. So the king commanded Benaiah, the son of Jehoiada, which went out and fell upon him, and he died. And the kingdom was established in the hands of Solomon. In other words, the kingdom of Solomon was not established until the enemies of Solomon were dead. The same thing will happen with Messiah. The kingdom of Messiah will not be established until the enemies of Messiah will be dead. Now, the first thing we should notice is that the reign of Solomon began with judgment. See, men who lived through the entire reign of David and got away from many hideous crimes, but now they got their punishment. You see, those guys got their punishment. The same thing happens the start of the millennial reign of Messiah on the earth. See, and in Matthew 25, 31 and 32 says, when the Son of Man shall come in his glory and all the angels with him, then he shall sit upon the throne of his glory. Verse 32. And before him shall be gathered all nations, and he shall separate them one from another, as a shepherd divides the sheep from the goat. In 1 Corinthians 4, 5 says, therefore judge nothing before the time until Adonai come, who both will bring the light, the hidden things of darkness, and will make manifest the counsel of the hearts, and then shall every man have praise of God. But we see that people in our age commit great sins against God and men, and for the time being do not seem to be judged for their actions. See, Yahweh in His mercy and patience allowed the time to repent. But He has set aside the time when the judgment of the world will come. See, when Solomon began his reign, judgment was pronounced on wicked men. So it will be in the return of Yeshua. It begins with judgment. So therefore, we see a parallel with the kingdom of Yeshua. And if you read the book of Revelation, it tells you, if you read Zechariah, it tells you the same thing. Actually, let's go there. Let's go to Zechariah chapter 14. In Zechariah chapter 14, it gives you a glimpse, one of many prophetic pictures about what the Messiah will do when he comes back and what he's going to do. And it's very significant because we need to understand this. It says in verse 1, says, behold, the day of Yahweh is coming, and your spoil will be divided in your midst, and I will gather all the nations to battle against Jerusalem. The city shall be taken, the houses riffled, and the women ravished. Half of the city shall go into captivity, but the remnant of the people shall now be cut off from the city. Then Yahweh will go forth and fight against those nations, he as he fights in the day of battle, and in that day his feet shall stand on the Mount of Olives, which faces Jerusalem on the east, and the Mount of Olives will split in two from east to west, making a very large valley. Half of the mountain will move towards the north, and half of the mountain towards the south. So we see how he's making war against his people. Now what's interesting is that right after that, there's going to be peace. There will be peace. Okay? And it says in verse 16, or chapter 14, and it shall come to pass that everyone who is left of all the nations which came against Jerusalem shall go up from year to year to worship the king and Adonai of hosts, and to keep the feast of tabernacles. And it shall be that whichever of the families of the earth do not come up to Jerusalem to worship the king, the Lord of hosts, on them there will be no rain. In the family of Egypt, they will not come up to enter in. They shall have no rain. They shall receive the plague which the Lord strikes the nations who do not come up to keep the Feast of Tabernacles. Okay? And it's interesting, verse 20. In that day, holiness to Yahweh shall be engraved on the bells of the horses. The pots of the Lord's house shall be like the bowls of the altar. So we see that there's peace in the kingdom when Messiah comes back. Now, let's talk about the wisdom of Solomon and compare that to the wisdom of our Messiah. And we need to understand this because those are prophecies in Isaiah that speak about this. And we need to compare notes here. So now, in 1 Kings chapter 3, Yahweh revealed himself to Solomon. He says, in Gibeon, Yahweh appeared to Solomon in a dream and by night. And Elohim said, ask what I shall give thee. Ask what I shall give thee. And Solomon said, Thou hast shown unto thy servant David, my father, great mercy, according as he walked before you in truth, and in righteousness, and in uprightness of heart with you. And you hast kept for him his great kindness, for you hast given him a son to sit on his throne, as it is this day. Verse 7 all the way through verse 13. It says, and now, Yahweh my Elohim, you hast made thus your servant king instead of David my father, and I am but a little child. I know how to go out and to come in. And thy servant it is in the midst of thy people, which you hast chosen, a great people that cannot be numbered, nor counsel for multitude. Give therefore your servant an outstanding heart, an understanding heart, to judge thy people, that I may discern between good and bad. For who is able to judge this so great people? And the speech pleased Yahweh, and Solomon had asked this thing. And Elohim said to him, because you hast asked this thing, and hast not asked for thyself long life, neither has you asked for riches for yourself, neither has asked for life on thy enemies, the life of your enemies, for you have asked for yourself understanding and to discern judgment. Behold, I have done according to your words. Lo, I have given you a wise and understanding heart, so that there was none like you before you, neither after you shall arise like unto you. And I have also given you that which thou hast not asked, both riches and honor, so that there will be not among the kings like unto you in all thy days. Now what's interesting is you have riches, you have understanding, and you have counsel. Now what's interesting is Yahweh gives them a discerning heart. He says, nobody ever be like you. Okay? Now let's compare to see what happens with Yeshua, the prophecy about the Messiah to come. In chapter 11, verse 1 through 5, says, and there shall come forth a rod, the rod out of the stem of Jesse, and a branch shall grow out of its roots, and the Spirit of Yahweh shall rest upon him, the Spirit of wisdom and understanding. There we go. Talking about the branch, the root, okay, which is Yeshua. And the Spirit of the Lord of Yahweh will rest upon him, the Spirit of wisdom and understanding, the Spirit of counsel and might, the Spirit of knowledge and of the fear of Yahweh. Okay, which those seven can be tied up like the menorah. Okay? Now, it shall make him of quick understanding in the fear of Yahweh, and he shall not judge after the sight of his eyes, neither reprove after the hearing of his ears. But with righteousness shall he judge the poor, and reprove the equity for the meek of the earth. And he shall smite the earth with the rod of his mouth, and with the breath of his lips he shall slay the wicked. And righteousness shall be girdle of his, on his loins, and faithfulness the girdle of his reign. And what's interesting is Yeshua shows us a glimpse of that wisdom and that proper judgment in John chapter 8. In John chapter 8 we see the woman, the adulterous woman, which the elders and the leaders bring to Yeshua, testing him. See, they didn't bring the adulterer, they only brought her. And the false witnesses were there. So therefore, they were trying to set Yeshua up. Yeshua did not see or was not a witness of the crime. So therefore, he could not bring forth judgment, even though he knew she was guilty because she was a prostitute. But the Torah is very specific. It says, by the evidence of two or three witnesses, any matter is established. So therefore, by Yeshua not seeing the issue himself, not seeing her do it, and by them not bringing the adulterer and not bringing the witnesses, the right witnesses, that's why Yeshua said, if anyone's without sin, throw the first stone. Because according to the book of and the Torah, the people that saw it, that witnessed, they were the ones who has to first throw the first stone. They have to kill her first. So here we see an evidence of how Yeshua brings righteous judgment. But what's interesting is many people ask, what did Yeshua write on the earth? Because he knelt down and he was writing something on the ground. Let's look that up. Let's go to Jeremiah chapter 13. In Jeremiah chapter 13, you have a very interesting verse. Jeremiah 17, I apologize. In Jeremiah chapter 17, verse 13. See, oh, Yahweh, the hope of Israel. But you see the word hope there in Hebrew doesn't say hope. It says mikvah, the mikvah of Israel. In other words, baptism. Oh, Yahweh, the mikvah of Israel. A mikvah brings sanctification and purification. All who forsake you shall be ashamed. Those who depart from me shall be written on the earth, because they have forsaken Yahweh, the fountain of living waters. So I believe that when Yeshua knelt down on the ground, he was doing a few things. First of all, he was grabbing some dust from the ground, giving them a reminder of the laws of jealousy of Numbers chapter 5, and also reminding them about the prophecy in Jeremiah 17:13 that they were rejecting the well of living waters by bringing a woman who was a prostitute and trying to set him up by allowing him to bring false testimony. So there's a lot of things we can talk about, and I hope this is making sense to you. You know, I appreciate all of you for, first of all, you know, getting the CDs and supporting the ministry. But most importantly, I want to just share with you how an honor it is to teach you and share with you and come into your homes and or your cars or whatever you are and allow me to share some of these things. Again, do not believe anything I say. Please verify everything I say. That it bears witness. And keep me in your prayers that he will always give me the wisdom, the understanding, and the discernment. So here we see the Solomon have wisdom and understanding. And we see the prophecy of the Messiah in Isaiah 11, verses 1 through 5, that he was given wisdom, understanding, discernment, counsel, the spirit of knowledge, and the fear of Yahweh. Okay? See, the wisdom, understanding, and knowledge, and the counsel are all part of the millennial rule of Messiah. Okay? So when Messiah comes, true justice will be applied in every situation, and nothing can escape the limitless understanding of the Messiah in the kingdom. Okay, so now, let's keep reading. Let's keep talking about how great the wisdom was of Solomon and the parallels to Yeshua. 1 Kings 4, verse 29 through 34 says, "And Elohim gave Solomon wisdom and understanding exceeding much, and largeness of heart, even as the sand that is on the seashore. And Solomon's wisdom excelled the wisdom of all the children of the east country, and all the wisdom of Egypt. For he was wiser than all men, than Ethan the Ezrahite, and Heman, and Harhol, and Dardan, the son of Mahol. And his fame was in all nations round about." What's interesting is the fame of our Messiah and his wisdom has truly been all over the world. People know about the wisdom. People quote his verses. People quote the parables. They speak all the things that Yeshua spoke. In verse 32 of chapter 4, 1 Kings says, "And he spake 3,000 proverbs, and his sons and his songs were 1,005. And he spake of trees from cedar trees that is in the Lebanon, even unto the hyssop that springeth out of the wall. He spake also of the beast, and of fowl, and of creeping things, and fishes. And there came all the people to hear the wisdom of Solomon, from all kings of the earth, which have heard of his wisdom." What's interesting is, Yeshua, the same thing has to happen to him. Let's see what the prophecy says. In Isaiah chapter 2, verse 1 through 5 says, "The word of Isaiah, the word that Isaiah the son of Amos saw concerning Judah and Jerusalem. And it shall come to pass in the last days that the mountain of the Lord's house, Yahweh's house, shall be established in the top of the mountains. And it shall be exalted above the hills, and all nations shall flow unto it." All nations, remember, in the kingdom of Solomon, all nations flow to Jerusalem. In the kingdom of Messiah, all nations shall flow to him. Verse 3, "And many people shall go up and say, Come ye, let us go up to the mountain of Yahweh, to the house of the Elohim of Jacob. And he will teach us his ways, and we will walk in his path. For out of Zion shall go forth the Torah and the word of Yahweh from Jerusalem. And he shall judge." Who's he? The Messiah. Okay? "The word of the Lord shall judge among the nations and shall rebuke many peoples. And they shall beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks. Nation shall not lift up their sword against nation, neither shall they learn Shall they learn war anymore? Therefore, O house of Yaakov, come ye and let us walk in the light of Yahweh." So we see that there's going to be peace, an eternal peace in the kingdom of Messiah. And there all the nations will go up to the mountain, just like they did with Solomon, the same thing they will do with Messiah. Okay? Amen. So let's talk about the peace the Prince of Peace. Solomon, his name was Shlomo, peaceable. But in 1 Chronicles 22, verse 6, they said, "Then he called for Solomon his sons and charged him to build a house for Yahweh Elohim of Israel." Verse 7, 8, and 9. And it says, "And David said to Solomon, 'My son, as for me, it was in my mind to build a house unto the name of Yahweh, my Elohim. But the word of Yahweh came to me, saying, Thou hast shed blood abundantly, and hast made great wars. Thou shalt not build a house unto my name, because thou hast shed much blood upon the earth in my sight. Behold, my son shall be born to thee, who shall be a man of rest. I shall give him rest from all his enemies round about, for his name shall be Shlomo. And I will give peace and quietness unto Israel in his days.'" You know what's interesting? We got to see the same peace in the kingdom of... So the King David has not been allowed to build the temple because he was a man of war. See, instead of and then he granted his son to build the temple, Yahweh. So he will be being a man of peace and rest. What's interesting, the book of Hebrews talks about the rest that will come with the coming of Messiah. That we have to enter into another rest. Messiah, when we go into the millennial reign, when Messiah comes, the day of the Lord is the day of the Sabbath, the 7,000 year from creation, and then we will rest with him for 7,000 years, I'm sorry, for 1,000 years, and we will have peace. Because that's what the whole premise of the Sabbath. We are rehearsing so we let the world know that we are betrothed to the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, but more so that we are demonstrating to the world the future redemption through Messiah and how much peace we're going to have with him as our king. When I was in Jerusalem, one of the things that really intrigued me was that I spent some time with some Hasidics. They allowed me to stay in their house and spend Shabbat with them. I was there for 60 days the first time. And it was really intriguing how they see me before Shabbat and they ask me, "Hey, do you got a place to keep Shabbat?" And I said, "No." I said, "Will you come in with us?" So they'll take me to their house. And in one occasion, I had this lady and her husband, they're Hasidics, and they asked me to stay with them. And I slept in their house, not knowing me. You know, they took me and they fed me. And the lady turns around, she goes, she's teaching me Shabbat because she didn't know. She knew I was a tourist, so she's teaching me as if I don't know anything. And she says, "To us, Shabbat, as Israel is the bride, when we prepare the table, when we put our best garments, when we eat the best of foods, we are getting our house and our bodies ready to receive our King Mashiach." That's the premise of Sabbath. To prepare yourself and prepare your home to receive your King, the Messiah. And I thought that was a very beautiful teaching. I really got the true essence of what they think about Shabbat, which is having peace in their home and having an understanding that what reign in their house on the whole day of Shabbat is the Shekhinah, is the presence of God. They want the Kavod, the glory of the Lord, to dwell in their midst by having the King ready. It's interesting. So now, let's read in Isaiah chapter 2, verse 3, 4, and Isaiah chapter 9, 6, 7, and 8, and Isaiah 11, verse 6, 7, 8, 9. I'm going to give you a lot of verses, so which is very typical of me anyway. Listen to what it says. "So if Solomon had a peaceful kingdom, so shall the Messiah have a kingdom peaceful." A peaceful kingdom, sorry. It says in Isaiah 2, verse 3, 4, says, "And many people shall go up and say, 'Come ye, let us go to the mountain of Yahweh, to the house of the Elohim of Yaakov. And he will teach us his ways, and we will walk in his path. From out of Zion shall go forth the Torah, and the word of Yahweh from Jerusalem. And he shall judge among the nations, and shall rebuke many people, and they shall beat the sword into plowshares, and their spears into pruning hooks. Nation shall not lift up sword against nation.'" So there will be peace. "Neither shall they learn war anymore." Isaiah chapter 9, verse 6, 7, and 8 says, "For unto us a child is born, and unto us a son is given. And the government shall be upon his shoulder, and his name shall be called Wonderful, Counselor, the Mighty Elohim, the Everlasting Father, and the Prince of Peace." So Messiah is the Prince of Peace. He has to bring peace to the world. Verse 7, "Of the increase of his government and peace shall there be no end upon the throne of David and upon his kingdom to order it and to establish it with judgment and with justice. For henceforth, forever and ever, even forever, the zeal of Yahweh of hosts will perform this. Yahweh sent a word to Yaakov, and it has lightened up upon Israel. Isaiah chapter 11, 6, 7, 8, and 9 says, the wolf shall dwell with the lamb, and the leopard shall lie down with the kid, and the calf, and the young lion, and the fatling together, and the little child shall lead them. And the cow and the bear shall feed, their young ones shall lie down together. And the lion shall eat straw like the ox. In other words, they're not going to be animals of prey anymore. So even the animals are going to have peace with each other. And the suckling child shall play on the hole of an asp. And the weaned child shall put his hand on the crocodile's den. And they shall not hurt nor destroy in all my holy mountain. For the earth shall be full of the knowledge of Yahweh from as the waters cover the sea. So you see the prophecy about the Prince of Peace and how he will bring peace. The animals are not going to kill each other anymore. You know, and the children are not going to be afraid of anything. So we'll be able to be with serpents and with spiders, and we're not going to be afraid. They're not going to kill us. They're not going to do anything to us, which is very significant. We see another pattern in a picture of the kingdom of Solomon compared to the kingdom of our Messiah in the millennial reign, that Solomon built a temple in 1 Kings. 6:1 says, and it came to pass in the 480th year after the children of Israel will come out of the land of Egypt, in the fourth year of Solomon's reign over Israel, in the month of Sif, which is the second month, that he began to build the house of the Lord. 1 Kings 6:14 says, so Solomon built the house and finished it. So we see how Solomon built the house of Yahweh, and then we see how Yeshua will build the house and the third temple in Ezekiel chapter 40 to chapter 46 talks about that. So you see the parallels? See, what's already been established in the Bible is to teach us. Yahweh uses the physical to teach us the spiritual. But he also is using the physical to teaching us what's going to happen in the future with our Messiah. So this is what we have so far. We have Solomon having peace, starting his kingdom with judgment and war. He destroys his enemies. Then there's wisdom. Then there's peace. Then he establishes the temple. Same thing will happen with Messiah. Okay? He got his wisdom when he was a young child, just like Solomon. 12 years old, he was a great man of wisdom. And then he will come back in the clouds with judgment to the nations. And then there will be rest and peace. Then he will restore the temple. Okay? In Zechariah chapter 6, verse 12, 13, 14. Please don't mind me. I've been here all day, recording all day. It says, then take silver and gold and make crowns and set them upon the heads of Joshua, the son of Josedech, the high priest. And speak unto him, saying, thus speaketh Yahweh of Sabaoth, saying, behold, the man whose name is the branch. See, that's in reference to Messiah. And he shall grow out of this place, and he shall build the temple of Yahweh. You see, the branch is the one who's going to build the temple. And even he shall build the temple of Yahweh, and he bears the beauty. He shall bear the glory, and shall sit and rule upon his throne. And he shall be a priest upon his throne, and the council of peace shall be between them both. So he's going to be king and priest. Interesting. So, see, the title, the branch, is known. It's a known name given to the Messiah. We know that. Even the rabbis agree. They know that he's the branch. If I can find it here right away, I'll read it to you. It's very interesting. The rabbinical writings, they know that the Messiah is the branch. They know it and they know it. And they give you commentaries on it. It's just a matter of finding them, you know? You know, so when you find them and you look into the stuff, it's amazing what you find. Listen to what Rabbi Moshe ben Maimon says, Maimonides, applied to this of the Messiah, in reference to Zechariah chapter 2, verse 1 through 9. You know? And it's talking about the glory of the second temple. And it says, what is the manner of Messiah's coming? And where will the place of his first appearance? He will make his first appearance in the land of Israel, as it is written, Yahweh, whom you seek, will certainly come to his temple. We see that also when he comes. So there's so many things that we need to understand about Messiah. And I'm really excited because, you know, there's so much that we need to understand. In regards to peace, listen to what the Targum says of Isaiah. His name shall be called from of old, Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, who lives forever, the Anointed One, Messiah. In those days, peace shall increase upon us, end quote. The Perek Shalom, Rabbi Jose the Galilean said, the name of the Messiah is peace. For it says, Everlasting Father, the Prince of Peace. The Midrash Mishle, Berber edition, says about that verse, the Messiah is called by eight names, Yinon, Tsemach, Pele, Yoetz, which is Miracles and Counselor, Messiah, Elohim, Givor, Hero, Avi Avshalom, Eternal Father of Peace. So these are the titles of the Messiah, that he will be called that. Now, what's interesting is in Jeremiah, when it talks about the branch, I'm going to read you one in Jeremiah 30:23, verse 5 and 6. Says, the days are coming, declares Yahweh, when I will raise up to David a righteous branch. See, the same branch that is talking about Zechariah is also being talked about in Jeremiah 23. And it says, a king who will reign wisely to do what is just and right in the land, and his days, Judah will be saved and Israel will live in safety. This is the name by which he will be called. Yahweh our righteousness. See, the Targums, which is the Aramaic commentaries to the Torah, says, for instance, the great Rabbi David Kimchi wrote in the reference to this verse, by the righteous branch is meant Messiah. So the rabbis know that the branch spoken in Zechariah 6 and the branch spoken in Jeremiah 30:23 is the Messiah. Okay? The compilers of the Targums agree that Kimchi, since they introduced Messiah by name in this passage, so they know that it's about Messiah. See, also, the Hebrew scholar Alfred Edensheim quotes all the rabbinic writings in reference to this passage. So in Jeremiah, you know, the Targum has it as, I will raise up for David the Messiah the just. They add it to that text. In Jeremiah, they said the Messiah the just. This is one of the passages from which, according to rabbinic view, one of the names of the Messiah is derived, and they call him Yahweh Sidkenu. But also one of the titles is also the branch. I hope you're enjoying this. I'm having a good time as always, you know. I hope this is making sense to you. Remember, we are comparing the kingdom of Solomon to the kingdom of the future of the Messiah to come. The crowning of Joshua in this passage in Zechariah, okay, foreshadows the crowning of Messiah. Because you see, the name of the high priest here is Yahushua. And that's a root from Joshua. And he's the high priest, just like Yeshua is the high priest. And he's in reference to the branch, and Yeshua is the branch. See? So at the time of the second coming of Messiah, he will build a temple. He will unite the offices of king priests into Messiah, the one person, Yeshua. Melchizedek will be king priest. Back in the Old, in the Testament, it tells you that. Well, the Messiah, as the branch and as the high priest, will restore the tribes of Israel back to him. And he will also bring peace into the kingdom. All those things in rest. In Genesis 14, 18, 19, and 20, we see a type and shadow of Messiah in the person of Melchizedek, in the order of Melchizedek. And Melchizedek, king of Salem, brought forth bread and wine, and he was the priest of the Most High Elohim. And he blessed him and said, blessed be Abram of the Most High God, possessor of heaven and earth. And blessed be the Most High God, which hath delivered thy enemies into thy hand, and he gave them tithe of all. So it's making a connection between Melchizedek, the priesthood, king priest, because the order of Melchizedek was a king priest. He was king priest. Both. Alright, so now, we know that Yeshua will build a temple, but right now, in the book of Exodus, see if I could find it right away, but in the book of Exodus, we see that when Yahweh desired to build the tabernacle, okay, and he wanted to build the tabernacle so that he may dwell within them. If I can't find it right now, you will excuse me, but I just came to my mind. But anyway, when it says that you shall build me a mikdash, that I may dwell among you, in the Hebrew it doesn't say among you. It says build me a tabernacle, a mikdash. But the way that it uses mishkan, a mikdash is in reference more like it's talking like in human terms. Mikdash is more like a, you know, something like a structure. Mishkan is more like a structure, but mikdash is more like in human terms. See, even the rabbis agree that the original intent of Yahweh was that when he came down on Mount Sinai, that every one of Israel, that the Spirit of the Most High would dwell inside of every single Israelite. So when in Exodus it says, build me a mikdash that I may dwell among you, in the Hebrew it doesn't say among you. In the Hebrew says, that I may dwell within you. So Yeshua came and to restore the original plan of Yahweh, Mount Sinai. When he came, he died and he rose from the dead. He, Spirit, now can dwell within us. And now we are the mikdash. We are the temple of the Most High. So we are now the temple. So he's doing two things. He's building a spiritual tabernacle, a temple, which that was his intent. Israel is his abode. That's where he wants to dwell. But also a physical temple in Jerusalem. Did that make sense to all of you? I hope that does. All right. And 1 Corinthians 6:19 says, what? Know ye not that your body is the temple of the Holy Ghost, or the Ruach HaKodesh, which is in you, which ye have of Elohim, and ye are not of your own? See, so we are a habitation for the Spirit of the living God to dwell within us, so therefore we have to be holy unto Him, separated. That means that you have to keep the feast. You have to keep the Sabbath. You have to keep the commandments. You have to eat kosher. Because if we are priests unto the Lord, if we are priests, and we are the temple, and our hearts is the altar, nothing impure can dwell in the altar. Nothing impure. A pig cannot be put on the altar in the temple. It will be defiled. So therefore, if you're eating pig, you're defiling your body. And it has nothing to do with grace. It has something to do with holiness, being separated unto Him. Matthew 16, verse 6 says, and Simon Peter answered and said, thou art the Messiah, the Son of the living Elohim. Verse 17 and 18 says, and Yeshua answered him and said unto him, blessed art thou, Shimon Barjona, for flesh and blood hath not revealed it unto you, but my Father which is in heaven. And I said unto you, thou art Peter, O Kepha, little rock. And upon this rock I will build my church, my ecclesia, my congregation. And the gates of hell shall not prevail against it. He's not saying that Kepha is on Kepha they're going to build the church. That's what the Catholics think. The word Kepha means little rock. Peter means little rock. Yeshua is the rock. So he's alluding to something greater than Peter. See, Peter is Kepha, little rock, and he's saying upon this rock, speaking of himself. I'm the rock. Deuteronomy 32 tells you. And also in Jeremiah, in all the verses, talks about how they rejected the rock of their salvation. Now, we are going to see that when Solomon built the temple, the Ark of the Covenant was taken into the Holy Place, the Holy of Holies, and the glory, the Shekhinah of Yahweh, came on the earth. He accepted the sacrifice by bringing forth fire from heaven. So in 1 Kings chapter 8, verse 6, 7, 8, all the way through verse 11, says, and the priest brought in the Ark of the Covenant unto Yahweh into his place, and unto the oracle of the house, for the most holy place, even under the wings of the cherubims. For the cherubim spread forth their two wings over the place of the over the ark. It must have been beautiful. They were huge. And the cherubims covered the ark and the staves thereof above. And they drew out the staves, and the ends of the staves were seen out in the holy place before the oracle. And they were not seen without. And there they were unto this day. Verse 9. And there was nothing in the ark save the two tablets of stone, which Moses put there at Horeb, when Yahweh made a covenant with the children of Israel, when they came out on the land of Egypt. And it came to pass, when the priests that were come out of the holy place, that the cloud filled the house of Yahweh. See? The presence, the ark, that's his dwelling place, went into the holy place. So the priest could not stand to minister because of the cloud. For the glory, the Shekhinah of Yahweh, have filled the house of Yahweh. Interesting. See, now the temple is completed and the ark is returned to the Holy of Holies. And then Elohim shows his pleasure in all that he had done, and he filled the house and the temple with the glory and his presence. See, Yeshua is the ark. That's why the glory of the second temple will be greater than the first. See, He is the manifest presence. He's the image of the invisible Elohim. He is the power. And when Yahweh the Father speaks, the Son is the one that creates. And therefore, the same glory that filled the temple will in the kingdom to come in the millennial reign. And it's interesting. Because the world will see the glory of the Lord. It tells us that in Isaiah chapter 24, verse 23 through Isaiah 40, verse 5, and Isaiah 60, verse 1 through 3. And I'm going to read them all. Isaiah 24, 23 says, "Then the moon shall be confounded, and the sun ashamed, when Yahweh Sabaoth will reign on Mount Zion, and in Jerusalem, and before His ancients gloriously." Okay, the glory of the Lord. And then Isaiah 40, verse 5 says, "And Yahweh of hosts," I'm sorry. I'm seeing double here. Verse 5 says, "And the glory of Yahweh shall be revealed, and all flesh shall see it together, for the mouth of Yahweh has spoken it." So, when Messiah comes, okay, the whole glory of Yahweh will return to the earth again, and everybody's going to see it. So, what happened at a lower scale in the temple in the kingdom of Solomon was a type and shadow of what would happen worldwide when Messiah comes back again. And He brings peace. And He reveals the temple. And the glory of Yahweh comes to the earth. It's going to be a beautiful place to live in. Isaiah 60 verse 1 through 3 says, "Arise, shine, for thy light is come." The light means the Messiah. "And thy glory, the glory of Yahweh is risen upon thee. For behold, the darkness shall cover the earth, and gross darkness the people. But Yahweh shall rise upon you, and His glory shall be seen upon you. And the Gentiles shall come to your light, and the kings to the and kings to the brightness of your rising." Interesting. So you see so many parallels. So far, let me review real quick. So far we've seen that Solomon's reign began with judgment. So will the kingdom of Messiah begin with judgment. That the wisdom of God was present in the reign of Solomon. Also the wisdom of Yahweh is in Messiah. You see that in Isaiah. That Solomon is a shadow of the Prince of Peace. It's a type and shadow of the Prince of Peace. His name is Shlomo, which means peaceable. We know that in the kingdom of Messiah, peace will come on the earth. That Solomon built the temple of Elohim. Therefore, Messiah will reign with His bride, which all of us are His temple. But also, He will build a literal temple of God. And you find that in the book of Ezekiel chapter 40 to chapter 46. The Ark of the Covenant and the glory of Yahweh returned to the in the reign of Solomon, back to Israel. So will the glory and the Shekinah of Yahweh and the Ark of the Covenant return in the millennial reign. So it's very interesting. We see so many parallels between the kingdom of Solomon and the kingdom of our Messiah. So you can start going, when you start reading through the Word of God, now you're not looking at it from one way, one only perspective, like all time stories, like Old Testament stories. You're looking at it like a type and shadow of the future things to come. Paul tells us in Colossians. He tells us in Colossians directly when he's talking about, you know, what people take out of context about things to eat and whatever. I'm going to only give you two verses. It says, "Therefore let no one judge you in food or drink or regarding a festival or a new moon or a Sabbath, which are a shadow of things to come, but the essence is of Messiah." He's not telling the people in Colossians that you don't let anybody judge you, that you can eat whatever. No, he's saying, no. See, the feast, the new moon, the Sabbath, all those things, kosher, those are a shadow of things to come. By us keeping them right now, we are practicing and declaring to the world as witnesses that that's our future redemption, and that's exactly what's going to be happening for the rest of our lives. We are the vessels. Our lifestyles, by keeping the feast, the Sabbath, and eating kosher, and keeping the biblical commandments, we are letting the world know that this is the promise of our redemption, that we will do these things in the millennial reign. We are basically witnesses to the whole world. That's why it's so important to follow Torah, because we are revealing the heart of Yahweh to the people. We're revealing the plan of Yahweh to the people. We're revealing the plan of redemption, the restoration, reconciliation, sanctification. All those things are within the Torah and the prophets. So by us keeping a mezuzah on the door, by us wearing tzitzit, and by us keeping the feast, keeping the Sabbath, and eating kosher, we are declaring to the world our future life. Beginning it now. We are rehearsing those things now. It's become a struggle now, but in the millennial reign, it's going to be easy to do. Go to Israel when you have an opportunity. And if you go to Israel and Sabbath comes, it's going to be like in the kingdom, man. Everything shuts down in Jerusalem. It's easy to keep Sabbath in Jerusalem. Things shut down. You don't have an excuse not to keep it. You can't go anywhere. You have to go to Tel Aviv. You got to go someplace else. You know? So what happens, you have to watch out where you drive to, because if you're driving through a Hasidic ultra-Orthodox, they'll stone you. They'll throw rocks at you. You know? You're not supposed to drive on Sabbath. You know what I mean? But it's easy to keep Sabbath in the land of Israel. Everybody does. So in one way or shape or form. Not everybody, but you know, the religious groups. How much difficult is it to keep Sabbath where I live in Puerto Rico or the United States? People are either judging you, or they're making your life miserable, or they're making sure that they want you to work exactly on the day that Yahweh has set aside for you to have peace and rest. So thank Yahweh that He's choosing us for this example. So now let's talk about the exaltation of Israel. In the kingdom of Solomon, we can see the exaltation of Israel. In other words, the kingdom of the Messiah will be exalted by the wisdom of our Messiah. 1 Kings chapter 10, verse 4 through 9 says, And when Queen Sheba has seen all of Solomon's wisdom and the house he had built. Here the house means the temple. And the meat of his table, and the seating of his servants, and the attendants of his minister, and the apparel of the cupbearers, and his accent by which he went up in the house of Yahweh. There was no more spirit in her. Anyway, she was overwhelmed, Queen Sheba. I submit to you that Queen Sheba in this story can be a type and shadow of the congregation. The Israel. Type and shadow of Israel. Howbeit, I believe not the words, until I came. Now, this is Queen Sheba talking. And my eyes have seen it, and behold, half was not told to me. Thy wisdom and prosperity exceed the fame which I've heard. Happy is thy man. Happy are these thy servants, which stand continually before you, and to hear your wisdom. Blessed be Yahweh thy Elohim, which delighted in you and set you to the throne of Israel, because Yahweh loved Israel forever. Therefore, He made you king to do judgments and justice. And 1 Kings chapter 10, verse 23 to 27 says, So King Solomon exceeded all the kings of the earth for riches and for wisdom. And all the earth sought to Solomon to hear his wisdom, which God had put in his heart. And they brought every man his present, vessels of silver, vessels of gold, and garments, and armor, and spices, and horses, and mules, right year by year. And Solomon gathered together chariots and horsemen, and he had 1,400 chariots, and 12,000 horsemen, whom he bestowed in the cities for chariots, and with the kings of Jerusalem. And the king made silver to be in Jerusalem as stones, and cedars made he to be as sycamore trees that are on the vale for abundance. You see, there was a lot of abundance. Now, you got to remember, everything that you just heard right there, the same thing has to happen in the millennial reign. Okay? So, the things that we need to look at, the last things we need to look at is this. Queen Sheba, which is a type and shadow of Israel in this story, she was overwhelmed. She ascribed to all that she saw and heard of Yahweh's eternal love for Israel. I don't know about you, but we have not seen our Redeemer. We have not seen our King. But I know that when we see Him, we're going to be in awe. Because someday we're going to see the city come down from the heavens, the New Jerusalem. And we will be at awe of the kingdom of Messiah on the earth, and the peace, and all the vessels. And just like the children of Israel, when they came out of Egypt, they came with favor from the Egyptians, and they got all the gold, and they got all the plunder, and they got all the wealth. The same thing is going to happen when we leave, when we go into the kingdom. He's going to give us all the wealth in the kingdom of Messiah. Okay? Now, what's interesting is this. In Micah chapter 4, verse 2 says, And many nations shall come and say, Come, let us go up to the mountain of Yahweh, to the house of the God of Yaakov, and He will teach us His ways, and we will walk in His path, for the law shall go forth from Zion, and the word of the Yahweh from Jerusalem. Zechariah 8, verse 20 to 23 says, Thus says Yahweh of hosts, It shall yet come to pass that there shall come people and the inhabitants of many cities, and the inhabitants of one city shall go to one another, saying, Let us go speedily to pray before Yahweh, to seek Yahweh of hosts. I will also go, I will go also. Yeah, many people and strong nation shall come to seek Yahweh of hosts in Jerusalem, to pray before Yahweh. And thus says Yahweh of hosts, in those days it shall come to pass that 10 men shall take hold of all, hold out of the languages of the nations, and even shall take hold of the seat of him that is a Jew, saying, we will go with you, for we know, we heard that God is with you. So in this present age, the Jew is still bearing the effects of having forsaken God. In other words, they've forsaken Yahweh and his Redeemer. They are basically serving Yahweh and they call him Bahashem, but they're not really following him with a true heart because they're following commandment of men. But they're doing a lot of things right. Don't get me wrong. See, Israel or Judah has faced more persecution than any other people in the world. The Jews have. That's only one tribe. Israel has faced more trials than any other people in the world. Just in Solomon's day, the children of Israel will be exalted and supreme in the kingdom. So it will happen to us. Because we have suffered, when we go into the kingdom, we will be exalted by the Messiah himself. Okay, he will put us in place of honor. See, the day is coming when Elohim again shall fulfill the promises of a chosen nation. The glory and the splendor of Israel will be restored. The Gentiles will go and go seeking after the Israelites because they know that Yahweh is with us. And Yeshua himself will rule from Jerusalem. In Isaiah chapter 24, verses 23 says, then the moon shall be confounded and the sun ashamed when Yahweh of hosts will reign in Mount Zion and in Jerusalem before the ancients gloriously. Zechariah 14, verse 8, 9, 10, all the way to 16, and I'll be done with this. Remember what Shiva, Queen Shiva was amazed? There was gold, there was peace, there was happiness, there was rejoicing, there was all those things. There was a banquet. Same thing is going to happen in the book of Revelation. There's the wedding of the Lamb. But in Zechariah 14, verse 8, all the way down to verse 16 says, then the moon, I'm sorry, that's the other one. And it says, and it shall be in that day that living water shall go out from Jerusalem, half of them towards the former sea, half of them towards the hinder sea, in summer and in winter shall be. And Yahweh shall be king over all the earth. In that day there shall be one Yahweh, and his name will be Echad, will be one. Verse 10, and chapter 14 of Zechariah. All the land shall turn as the plains of Gibeah to Rimmon, south of Jerusalem. And it shall be lifted up, and inhabited in her place. From Benjamin's gate, unto the place of the first gate, unto the corner gate, from the tower of Hananel, into the king's winepress. And men shall dwell in it, and there shall be no more utter destruction, for Jerusalem shall be safely inhabited. That hasn't happened for 2,000 years. And this shall be the plague wherewith Yahweh will smite all the people that have fought against Jerusalem. Their flesh shall consume away while they stand upon their feet, and their eyes shall consume away in their holes, and their tongue shall consume away in their mouth. And it shall come to pass in that day that a great tumult from Yahweh shall be among them. And they shall lay hold every one in the hand of his neighbor, and his hand shall rise up against his hand of his neighbor. And Judah shall also go fight at Jerusalem. And the wealth of all the heathen around shall be gathered together, gold, silver, apparel, and great abundance. Exactly like it happens over here in the story of Solomon in 1 Kings chapter 10. Same thing. You have the wealth. You have the gold, you have the apparel, you have great abundance. And so shall be the plague of the horse and the mule and the camel and of the ass and all the beasts that shall be in the tent on this plague. And it shall come to pass that everyone that is left of all the nations which came against Jerusalem shall go up from year to year to worship the King, Yahweh of hosts, and to keep the Feast of Tabernacles. That's exactly what happened in the kingdom of Solomon. People needed to bring tribute. That's why he married so many women. Because he was making peace. He was making treaty with those kingdoms. And therefore they were giving him their daughters as the security of the treaties. That's why he has so many wives. Maybe he didn't sleep with all of them. I don't know how he could have. You know? But that was like a way of saying, I give you my daughter so you and I can be in covenant. You see? So what's interesting here is that the same thing that happened in the kingdom of Solomon, that all the nations will bring forth wealth, The same thing is going to happen in the reign of Messiah, in the millennial reign, that all the nations have to go up from year to year to bring a sacrifice unto Yahweh and to bring their tithe, because it's a Feast of Tabernacles. So what have we covered? We have covered many types and shadows here about the reign and the kingdom of Solomon compared to the kingdom of Messiah. And I'll review. Solomon's reign began with judgment, as it says in 1 Kings 2, verse 25, 34, and 1 Kings 2, verse 44 to 46. So will the kingdom of Messiah begin with judgment. In Matthew 25, verses 31 and 32, and 1 Corinthians verses 4, chapter 4 and verse 5. The wisdom of Solomon was present in the kingdom, in his kingdom. It was his reign, the kingdom. He had great wisdom. So will Messiah when he comes. The Solomon is a shadow of the Prince of Peace. 1 Chronicles 22, verse 6 and 9. So is Messiah proclaimed the Prince of Peace in Isaiah chapter 2, verse 3 and 4, Isaiah 9, 6, 8, and Isaiah 11, verse 6 and 9. Solomon built the temple of Yahweh. So will Messiah when he comes in Ezekiel chapter 40 to verse 46. The Ark of the Covenant and the glory, the Shekhinah of Yahweh, return during the reign of Solomon. So will the glory and the Shekhinah of Yahweh will return to the earth in the days of Mashiach. In Isaiah chapter 24, verse 23, Isaiah 40, verse 5, Isaiah 60, verse 1 through 3. And also, the nation of Israel will be exalted, was exalted during the reign of Solomon. And great wealth and people came to the nation of Israel. And Israel was basically the center of the earth during the reign of Solomon. So will it happen again when Yeshua comes on the earth. And all the nations will seek Yahweh when he rules from Jerusalem. Micah chapter 4 verse 2. Zechariah chapter 8 verse 20 and 23. Isaiah 24 verse 23. And Zechariah 14 verse 8 through 16. And hopefully you got a great picture of the type and shadow of the story and the reign of Solomon's kingdom and how that is connected with the future reign of our Messiah. See, this is how I look at it. If Messiah's life and his type and his perfect work is not found in the Torah, then he's not the Messiah. If it's not found in the prophets, then he's not the Messiah. I have a teaching that is the prophet like unto Moses, which I take the life of Moses and I say the parallel his life to the life of Yeshua. And it's perfect harmony. Everything Moses did, Yeshua did, other than killing somebody. Because Yeshua didn't, he didn't commit murder. But he will bring vengeance against his brothers. Remember that Moses was basically defending his brother when the Egyptian was abusing the Hebrew. Yeshua will do the same thing in the kingdom. When he comes back, he will wage war against the enemies of Israel. So yes, he did exactly what Moses did. So here we see the pattern of the life of Moses and Yeshua. And we see the pattern in the life of Isaac and Yeshua. And we see the life of the reign of Solomon's kingdom compared to the reign of our Messiah, Yeshua HaMashiach, in the millennial reign. I hope you enjoy this. It's a lot of information in a short time. I was able to put it in an hour and 3 minutes. So may Yahweh bless you and keep you. Please stay tuned. And send me an email if you want any more information. And again, I always say, don't believe anything I say. Verify everything I say. Amen. Todah rabah. Shalom aleichem. And until next time.
Thank you for listening to this program. If you would like more information about Wisdom and Torah and any other future teachings, please contact us at 787-220-7116 or via email at wisdomandtorah@yahoo.com. Now we leave you with the Aaronic blessing. Shalom.
Yevarechecha Adonai v'yishmerecha Yaer Adonai Panav alecha vichunecha Yisa Adonai Panav alecha ואשם לך, לך שלום.
May the Lord bless you and keep you. May the Lord make his face shine upon you and be gracious to you. May the Lord lift up his countenance upon you and give you shalom. Amen.